This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Films Podcast. I'm Simon Mayo and the good doctor Mark Kermode was looking at the winners and losers for the BAFTAs 2008 in the company of Roger Deakins, who took home the award for Best Cinematography for his work on the Coen brothers' No Country for Old Men.
I didn't expect to win by any means. So.
Why not?
There's a lot of good work out there.
Who did you think might be winning?
I probably shouldn't say, but...
well, you can, because they didn't.
No, because there's still other award shows to come, so I'm not going to mention who.
Oh, I see. And you're Oscar-nominated.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
And that's for Jesse James.
For Jesse James and for No Country, yes.
And for No Country. And also, to say, so you did those two, and The Vale of Elah.
In the Valley of Elah, yes.
So that's right. Anything else we need to mention? You know, you didn't
no,
do Sweeney Todd?
No, I didn't do that. I wish. But
Mark Kermode is here because he's a BAFTA boy.
Oh, I thought Mark Kermode is here because he's our regular movie critic and we're always pleased to have him in. But thank you, since you want to put it in those brisk terms, Simon.
And so is it good night?
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. I mean, I actually think it reflects very well. I mean, look, you know, I'm a BAFTA member anyway, so I'm kind of a big supporter. But I think that what happened in the spread of the awards was really admirable. I really hate it when you get, like, one movie just channels through and just gets absolutely everything. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's best catering or best haircuts, whatever it is. The nice thing about what happened last night was, I mean, Atonement won Best Film, which kind of everyone had expected because it got 14 nominations. But it was, in the other categories, it was like all the significant films got one of the major awards, and I thought it was very well considered. Everyone thought, as you said, Daniel Day-Lewis was going to win Best Actor for There Will Be Blood, which I think is a wonderful piece of work. I think it's great. There was a surprise of Marion Cotillard winning for Best Actress, although nobody seemed more surprised than her. I mean, she was standing on the screen, especially saying, "I can't believe I'm here. This is absolutely fabulous. Who would have expected it?" Tilda Swinton, you know, won for Best Supporting Actress, and she, again, because everyone had thought that was going to go to someone like Cate Blanchett, she said, "If I thought I was going to win, I wouldn't have worn this frock, because it had been quite difficult to walk up onto the stage." And then in the screenplay categories, Juno won one, which I really like, as you know. Diving Bell and the Butterfly won one, which I really like. Best British Film category, Shane Meadows. Shane Meadows received his award from Sylvester Stallone. And have you ever seen anybody look happier than Shane Meadows getting an award given to him by Sylvester Stallone? And, of course, the Cinematography Award, which, of course, went to the right person. But you see, my only problem, as you know, in the award ceremonies this year is I think that one of the best movies of the year was The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And I'd be just, why isn't it in everyone's best film category? But there we are, you know. Here we have the you know, one of the reasons why it's such a great movie. I mean, why isn't that just nominated in every way? Don't you think it's a terrific piece of work?
Yeah, I think it was a really wonderful movie. And, I mean, it's 2 hours, 20 minutes, but I remember seeing the first cut, which was like 3.25 hours. And I thought that was an even better film.
Really?
But, you know, it's a very particular taste, isn't it, a film like that? And I honestly don't think the studio knew what to do with it.
But I thought, I mean, I went in to see it thinking, you know, anything that has, you know, leans towards Terrence Malick is dangerous territory, and I knew that it was meant to be long, and I knew that Andrew Dominik hadn't made a film for a long time since he did Chopper, which was a great calling card movie. And I went in with very low expectations, and I sat next to a colleague of mine, Nigel Floyd, and we watched this film, and we both came out literally speechless and turned to each other and went, "Is it just me, or is that the best film you've seen this year?" And I was then genuinely astonished and outraged when it didn't top everyone's awards list, because I think it's a masterpiece. I think it's an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful film, and Brad was terrific.
Yes.
I mean, Casey's getting attention, and rightly so, but I don't understand why people didn't talk more about Brad's performance, because he won Best Actor at Venice, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He won Venice. Was it Golden Bear or the Golden... One of the
Venice film
animals, yeah.
And then after that, the film just sort of went away. It was very weird.
No, bizarre, and it looks so wonderful. You know, your cinematography in it is extra... Well, you know this anyway, and I think it was a very popular win yesterday for... So congratulations all round.
And so this is a question for Mark. Can you tell if Roger Deakins has done cinematography? I mean, if you look at those three films, well received, but can you spot a Roger Deakins?
Well, here's the thing. I think it is possible at a certain level to distinguish certain cinematographer styles. I mean, for example, I think people would say, I know what a Janusz Kaminski film looks like, something like that. But I think the problem with that is that what it does is it pigeonholes people. It tends to suggest that they have one type of cinematography. And actually, it's one of those peculiar things with really, really well photographed photographed movies. You don't come out of it going, it was a really well photographed movie. You say the movie itself was a coherent whole. So, I mean, I can see things when I know, because obviously at the beginning of movies, you always look at the credits, and the cinematographer credit, or the DP credit, is always there at the beginning. So you are aware in advance. I mean, I knew when I was watching The Assassination of Jesse James, I knew who shot it. But I think the problem is it's easy to fall into just, I mean, listen, you may disagree with me, but I think it's easy to fall into saying this is a cinematographer's style. The best cinematographer's style is the style of the director.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting when I get offered a project and a director, I might go for an interview with a director, and the director says, well, I really like it look like Shawshank Redemption. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, thanks, but no thanks, because you don't really want to repeat yourself simply because of that. It's not interesting, but that's not what you do. You know, it comes from the script, and every project is so different.
But I mean, that said, I mean, I wrote a book about Shawshank Redemption, and
is it still available?
I think it probably is still available in all good bookshops. I mean, the British Film Institute's a modern classic on Shawshank Redemption, and one of the things that was central to that was picking the stills from the movie, in which, you know, you literally will just take the still straight out. And it is true that Shawshank is one of those movies you can go through, and it's just iconic image after iconic image, beautifully framed. I know that, you know, Mansfield Prison was an extraordinary set to work in anyway, but it's a really, really iconic piece of work, and so much of that, and Frank Darabont says this, so much of that is to do with the way you saw it rather than the way he told you to see it, because he was a writer rather than a director.
Yeah, it was very collaborative. I mean, but yeah,
when you were working just on Shawshank, which was of course surprised everybody, as I understand, when it came out, not a particular success.
No, it flopped. No, when it first came out, it lost money.
It was a Jesse James, you know, assassination. Jesse James reminds me of it.
But now, you know, when there's the regular call round of eminent people being asked to say their favourite film, Shawshank often comes right at the top of the list.
It does.
Yeah.
But so why is that? What's the logic behind something that flopped on release and yet becomes extremely popular? And if it was on TV tonight, would pull in a very, very good audience.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's just, impossible to say, really. Again, I don't think...
Do you remember how you thought when you were watching it? I mean, I know this is 12, 13 years ago now, but...
I remember when making it, I thought this is something really special. I mean, but it's so much for me. I'm operating the camera and watching the performances, and to watch Morgan and Tim, and, you know, that was something really special. You know, so I was surprised it didn't do very well at the cinema, but... They're not surprised that it got later success.
Like that's a classic case of a movie which found its audience on video. It's really strange. When it came out, it lost money. It didn't make the $40 million that it cost to make. And then it became the biggest renting video of the year. So much so that the company had no idea how many copies to run off, because they had no precedent for a movie doing that well.
In the chart, by the way, the Amazon book chart at the moment, The Shawshank Redemption by Mark Kermode, BFI Modern Classics...
It's ranked gone
155,288th in their book sales.
Well, there we go, and all those sales are down to your fabulous images. So thank you for that.
We should do a chart rundown on the program, shouldn't we? counting number one.
Look, can
from
I just
155,288.
As BFI monographs go, that's a big selling volume, and Frank Darabont liked it. So
my hunch is by the end of this conversation, you might even have cracked the top 100,000.
Yeah, okay.
This movie since when?
Barton Fink was the first one I did. So the last nine.
Now, you've already said if someone says, I want to, will you work on my project? I want it to look like Shawshank Redemption. You would say no.
Well, I wouldn't be quite so interested, I must say.
Okay. So you just, the Coen brothers just come to you because they know how you work? Do they know the kind of look that you'll give it? Is it just picking people that you like to work with, that are fun to be with?
Very much in that case, yeah. It's been a long relationship. You know, we're good friends now, you know. It's like they're very loyal to the people that they work with. They kind of tend to have a big extended family, really.
And when... the early conversations were going for No Country. What did they say to you? What were they looking for?
You know, really, we didn't really talk much about the look of film. I mean, not in initial conversations. I'd read the book and then read their script, and it just sort of something that happens gradually with them. We scout locations and talk about the look of the locations and stuff like that. It's just gradually something that evolves. But... I don't remember any specific conversations about lighting or anything else.
If you've ever seen the Coen brothers talk, them, and I mean, I've interviewed the Coen brothers both, you know, on television and on stage, and they're not people who fall naturally into verbalising their films. I mean, they by their own admission, they find it not very easy to talk about them. They've always said that the way that their collaborative process works, whether it be with cinematography or with actors, whatever it is, that they surround themselves with people they trust, and there's a kind of osmotic general sense of we all know sort of what we're doing. What they don't do is say, I want that to look like that and that to sound like that. And, you know, I mean, I've never yet heard them in a sort of simple, straightforward statement say, this is what we were trying to do with this shot or this thing. That's just not how they work.
No, that's not how they work. No, it's as you say, they it's all in the script. The script, for me, a script is very visual and the cues are in the script and they don't really sort of direct me.
Which must be fantastically refreshing. I mean, it basically sounds as though they say to everybody, just get on with it.
Well, get on with it. But on the other hand, we have a long prep period. They storyboard everything. So you know, I'm very aware of the kind of shots they want on the scene and everything else. But so, you know, by the time we actually come to the shooting, the point of shooting, it's very well prepared. We don't really have to talk much at all on a shooting day, you know. Just get on with it, yeah.
I won't put this point to Roger Deakins because he'll be too embarrassed or too humble.
So you're going to put it to me, so because you know that I'm not embarrassable.
Well, it's not about
or indeed humble.
It's not about you.
Oh, it's
then,
not about me. Oh, no, fine. Okay, just so long as I'm clear about that.
It's a text which says, it's a shame we're so obsessed with directors and actors. Otherwise, we'd know Roger Deakins was the real star, not least for Jesse James, criminally overlooked, as the good doctor said.
No, it was, absolutely. And I also like to say the interesting thing about, you know, winning last night, just looking again at the nominees in that cinematography category. It was Harris Savides for American Gangster, which I think is a very, very interesting looking film, that classic sort of Ridley Scott backlit dark interiors. Atonement, Seamus McGarvey, and I think what, you know, the thing that even I concede about Atonement is that there are visual coups in Atonement that are really fairly astonishing. I mean, it is a movie which has visual moments that are really, really something.
Are you talking about the long beach sequence?
Well, it's not just that. I mean, yes, that long beach sequence is a kind of, but there's a whole bunch of things involved in that. There's production design. There's just sheer mechanics of doing that beach sequence. But Atonement is a film that has a very distinct look to it. There's Bourne Ultimatum, Oliver Wood, of course. There's No Country for Old Men, Roger here, and then There Will Be Blood, Robert Elswit. Now, I mean, that was an astonishing looking film to win in that category up against that kind of.
Yeah, right.
I mean, those very, very handsome category. So. How exciting was it to get the award?
Well, it was shocking, really. But, you know, like you say, they're wonderful movies, aren't they? Yes, I mean, it's such a wonderful year for films. I mean, it really does make you feel kind of optimistic for the film industry, actually, that such films are being made and notice like that.
Well, my sense is that There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men are the things going head-to-head as far as the Oscars best film is concerned. I mean, I think those two are the big contenders, and I think it's going to be very hard to judge them, but my feeling is that actually what's going to happen is that No Country is going to win the best film Oscar, and I think the Coens will win the Best Director Oscar.
Well, that would be nice.
Why do you think that?
Because I tell you why. Because I'm, you know, as you know, I mean, I've seen No Country a few times. I saw it in Cannes first, and then since then, I think it's the best thing they've done. Maybe since Fargo, I think it sees getting back to the kind of stripped-down cinema they had at the time of Blood Simple. And I think it's a brilliant adaptation of that novel. I mean, it really does take the Cormac McCarthy novel and stick it up there on the screen. And it's very interesting that the few criticisms that I've read of the film tend to be criticisms of the novel, effectively. Like, it ends weird, and what's the thing with the dream and all that stuff, which is there. But I think that despite how tough it is and how much, as with so much of the Coen stuff, there's a very thin line between humour and horror, I think that it has a kind of universal appeal that I think it has more of that than There Will Be Blood. There Will Be Blood feels to me like so experimental. I love There Will Be Blood. I think it looks brilliant. I think it is like watching somebody reinvent the language of cinema. And I think in the case of that movie, it may be that it's too far out there. But the thing with No Country for Old Men is, I think despite how dark and complicated its subject matter is, it is a very inclusive film. I think you don't have to be a cineast to watch it, whereas I think There Will Be Blood is much more a film critic's film. It's
cineast?
You know what a cineast is. He does this to me all the time. It's like, you know, a boor.
Cineast.
That's, you know, pompous twit who writes for Sight and Sound.
Have you ever used that word in casual conversation, Roger?
Cineast?
Yeah.
I guess I have, yes.
Yeah, there we go. So that's 2-1.
I'm happy to be outnumbered by people who know what they're talking about at any stage. Matt, on this email, could you clear something up, please, regarding last night's BAFTAs? Mm-hmm. This Is England won in the best film category.
Yes, I can.
It was contested by Atonement in this category. So how can it be that Atonement, which didn't even win Best British Film, went on to win Best Film? And if This Is England was considered better than Atonement in the Best British Film category, why wasn't it included in the Best Film category in place of Atonement? Thanks for trying to clear this up.
OK, here's how it works. The Best British Film is decided by a jury, and the Best Film is open to all the members to vote for. So in terms of the Best British Film, there's a jury of about 30 people got together to discuss all the potential nominees, and they come up with their answer. And in terms of the Best Film, everybody from, you know, from all sections get to do it. So actually, the way it works with BAFTA voting is there's various elements. One of them is, you know, membership voting. One of them is chapter voting. One of them is jury voting. It works out like that. And I think, actually, what happened yesterday demonstrates what a good system that is, that you ended up with a very, very well thought out and very well considered spread of awards, in which it wasn't just people saying, well, I'm going to vote for that film because I like that film. People were individually looking at each of the elements. And I thought it worked very well. I mean, people have said this before, and if this is not the first time this has happened, that there's been a movie which has...
It does feel a bit strange, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't, because it's a different sensibility. Judging the Best British Film and judging the Best Film, it's not like saying that the Best British Film is a subset of film. It's like saying it's a different beast, and I think that's right.
This from Martin Asbury says, please give Roger my congratulations and remember me to him. I worked with him and storyboarded for him a long time ago. He's very talented.
Oh, hi. Yeah, Martin, I remember Asbury. Martin, yeah.
Jackie in Wrexham, am I the only person not to have seen Shawshank until last week? What a brilliant film. Cried at the end, of course. This from Simon in London. Listening to the last podcast, someone emailed criticising the ending of No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, that's what I just brought up.
And it was not a good date movie. So I had this long discussion as to whether it was.
I'm sure that was what you were aiming for when you were shooting it. Is it a good
trying to make a date movie? Yeah.
I went on a first date and watched it last Friday. I think it went well, as she has agreed to a second date. We're going to see, and there will be, There Will Be Blood this time. After listening to Mark's review, is this a good idea for a second date? Well, so if the first one went well with that, I think it probably would. Wouldn't it?
I think, you know, if
maybe you should ask Roger actually before you.
I think it'd be a very good choice. Yeah, I love the film.
Good date movie, though, for a
Well, I say, if No Country worked, then There Will Be Blood will be all right.
Well, I agree. I think if you've met up with somebody and you're looking for a partner in life and they say, let's go see a film, what do you want to see? You know, I want to see No Country for Old Men. Great. What do you want to see next? I want to see There Will Be Blood. You think, you know, hitch your wagon to that because that's that's an intelligent person. It's like, I never understood why it was that when, as a teenager, I took that particular girl to see the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and she walked out and we didn't speak after that. I don't understand why, because I'm still sure I was right. That's a brilliant film. I don't.
So your advice to Simon in London, hitch your wagon to that. Is
metaphorically.
He says, the ending of No Country was excellent, just different. I think people don't like it when plots aren't neatly tied up for them. Tommy Lee Jones' speech was fantastic. Bearing in mind, Roger, that most people haven't seen it yet, and there's, you know, but they will get to see it. Is there anything that you should tell us about the ending that wouldn't spoil it, but you think would inform the way we appreciate this film?
Oh, God, that, and I wouldn't know what to say. I'm sorry, Mark. What do you think?
Can I do it?
No,
but he's a cinematographer. He actually made it. It's hard to talk about something you made.
I love the end, but I actually think the last 20 minutes of the movie is the movie. I mean, it's very reflective, and it's so much about all of us, how we get older, how we get out of touch with, you know, the way the world is going. And I just think it makes me cry every time I see it. So, I don't know if that's a good...
Exactly, yeah. I just like to withdraw entirely. That is exactly, you know, so I apologise for saying, of course he can't, because he just did.
Okay, so but that's good. So the thing to bear in mind then is the last 20 minutes is
the movie.
The film.
I mean, the thing that I would say as a Ponzi critic is that what happens in the lead-up to that is what you have is plot. And in the last 20 minutes, it goes into poetry. I think that's sort of almost that Stanley Kubrick principle. The first bit of the movie powers you forward so that you can then go off into something else. And it is pure poetry, visual
really
poetry.
It catches you unawares. I mean, in the book as well, it's suddenly it becomes this whole reflective thing. It's really quite beautiful.
Darren on this says, could you ask Roger if the snakes that get decapitated were real?
No, they weren't. No. Not the ones that get decapitated. No, no, definitely not. It was done with fake heads, and the real head of the snake was in the hand, and the fake head of the snake. So you had the real snake wriggling at the back of Brad's hand, but the head was plastic. So when he cut the head off, it was just plastic.
Wow.
That was a very, very simple trick.
Absolutely.
For weeks we were talking about doing it CGI and how we were going to do this and that. And it ended up the simplest way is the best.
Linda on this, No Country for Old Men. Although I thought Javier Bardem was very good, he really only had to act in one dimension, whereas Josh Brolin was much more of a character and yet he was not mentioned at all. I don't disagree with the award to Javier, but I would have liked Josh to have been up there as well. Wonderful to have Roger on the show. And how could it... And then there's another question about atonement. At the end, Michael from Preston, with regard to Mark's comment about the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, we have half a dozen cinemas within half an hour of our house. None have shown the film at all.
It is really shocking, because that is, and I hope that you'd agree, Roger, that is a classic case of a film that needs to be projected. You need to see that film on a screen, not just on a DVD. You need to see it up there on the big screen, because it's so much of it's to do with light, you know.
Well, actually, that's a whole interesting category. Therefore, there are a whole, to quote you, a whole bunch of movies that actually you shouldn't really watch on DVD. It has to be...
Well, no, a movie's meant for a movie theatre. I mean, it's not meant to be watched on a, 20-inch, 30-inch screen.
Yeah, but
screen
P.S.
Whatever,
I Love You, you could watch on a 3-inch by 3-inch little portable.
Yeah, there's no better.
I guess.
So you've got the Oscars coming up.
Yes.
Another award ceremony.
Yes, another award.
And do you go with spring in your step and expectation in your heart?
I go because I think it's a wonderful celebration of film. I mean, I think that's what the Oscars are. I mean, I used to be cynical about them, but I'm less cynical these days because I think it is a celebration of film. And that's, that's what I love.
While we've been speaking, by the way, your book, Shawshank Redemption, Mark, has gone down 1,000 places in the Amazon.
Really? Well, while we've been speaking, I've been handed this, The Very Worst of Confessions by Simon Mayo. Yes. No customer reviews yet, be the first. Amazon sales rank 639,000th.
Fantastic.
538.
So what's the gap between our two books?
I think you're in another straight. You've gone through like a warp in the time-space. Because people are actually paying to have your book taken out of their house.
Fill in Seven Oaks. Your book on The Exorcist, 12,582. This is great. We're a couple of failures, really. Roger Deakins, on the other hand, is a huge...
An award winner
of the BAFTA from last night. It's been great having you on, Roger. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.